The possibility of communication between mortals and those in the world of spirits has been proven beyond doubt, and it now remains for men of genius to discover new methods, and to bring into this new field of research, the same intelligent action that is applied to the lower sciences, thereby increasing our knowledge of the spirit as they have of the material world. Those who, through ignorance or prejudice, decry a new discovery, and so prevent fair consideration, are enemies of civilization. The time has come for man to be free and to think alone. Neither the teachings of the so-called dead, nor the conclusions of the living, can change facts or nullify a single natural law. Truth has neither youth nor age, it is, and ever has been, a brother to reason. It does not need the assistance of fame or science, it has never been in the keeping of any particular class of men, it is the heritage of all who live. Let this fact sink deep into every human heart. The individual thought must at all times be kept clean and pure, for this wondrous and ever-active mind of ours is from day to day throwing the shuttle through the web of life, incessantly weaving the fabric of the condition that will clothe the naked soul on the threshold of the afterlife, and those in the great beyond watch beside the loom. From this great source, I have learned and know that the bridge of death no longer rests upon the clouds of hope, but upon great piers of knowledge, and the heart applauds the brain when one works to increase the force of universal good. Matter is eternal, only form is new, and one who but yesterday in the flush of health faced the storms of life with splendid courage, and whose body lies tonight in the embrace of Mother Earth, is no exception to the rule. All that was matter, as we use the term, the outer garment, all that gave him physical expression, will mingle with the substance from which it was formed, but his spirit is eternal. His progression will be unbroken, and his horizon will widen as he reaches the sphere beyond. I know that to the limits of that plane in which he lives at first, the human voice will carry, the thought will reach. The so-called dead live here about us, know our sorrows, and grieve with us. They share our happiness, they know our hopes and ambitions, and, by suggestion, through our subconscious brain, they influence our daily conduct. I know that every hope, ambition, and desire of earth is continued beyond this life, as is also the burden of wrong. I know that we are as much spirit now as we ever shall be, that in death, so called, we simply vacate and discard the gross material that gives us expression in this physical plane. All about this material world of ours, and in it there exists, in fact, the psychic or spiritual universe, more active and real than this, peopled with all the so-called countless dead, who have never died, who, no longer burdened with a physical body, move at will within the boundaries of their sphere, and ours in what appears as space to mortal man. Their life is an active one. All the new conditions, all the great laws by which they are to be governed, must be learned, and only by individual effort can they live intelligently and well. I know that a wrong act in earth life must be lived over again in the next, and lived right, before advancement is possible, that the labor is often long, but that families and friends are, in time, reunited and take up the thread where it was broken. I have heard them talk among themselves and to me, many eminent men and women, upon my invitation, have heard the same that I have heard in the material conditions that we have made. I know something of the democracy of death, and that all mankind is beginning to hear and march to the silent music of reason. I know, too, that the highest duty of everyone is to contribute what he can to the prosperity of the many. One rich in worldly goods, may be mentally poor in a land of opportunity, and this individual life of ours, whether it has had birth within the palace or the hut, no matter how it turns and curves and falls among the hills as it courses from the mountain tops, through valley lands, lying at times in stagnant pools of ignorance and vice, festering in the sun, must some day reach the great ocean of eternal life, from whence it came, clean and pure. We should ever look with our eager eyes for gems of truth, and what we find, we should have the courage to express. Some mortal lives are so lived that they stand out like trees aflame along the green and wooded shore where waters beat with endless wave. Others, like undergrowth within the endless forest, remain unknown. But each must, according to the immutable laws of progression, at some time, obtain perfect development, which is the heritage of all, This is the law of life. I know that in the kingdom of the mind there can be no personal dictation, that there is no God but universal good, no savior but one self, no trinity but matter, force, and mind. I see good in every act of kindness, in all the words of wisdom that fall from human lips, and to me all the good in all the world is God. Chapter 26. The tribute on June 24, 1912, at her home in Rochester, New York. Emily S. French, the most perfect psychic of modern times, left this world of ours. She had passed on life's highway the stone that marked fourscore and more, and weary with the burden of good deeds and many years, she crossed the golden bridge from life to life. On that June day, as I stood where all that was mortal of my friend was being put away, memory flashed back to a previous time. I saw the open grave of my mother, I felt again the biting winds, and the chill of another death, a sensation born of ignorance, and I recalled my early resolution to solve the problem of dissolution. Again I stood apart, about me hills and valleys crowned and carpeted with green, winding roads, lakes and streams, trees and shrubs and flowers, and when the casket was lowered, the sun's rays, rich and warm, fell upon it, and birds sang merrily in the trees. With joy in our hearts, we among the many who came to bid Mrs. French Godspeed, turned homeward, for this good woman, one among millions, had gone to the next life with absolute knowledge of what conditions were to come. She knew that death was not the end, but the open door. Glad, one asks, that she has gone. Yes, for it is the most glorious privilege possessed by mankind, after a long and eventful career, when the shadows lengthen, to pass to more intense and comprehensive life. Mrs. French was born possessed of what Crookes has termed psychic force. From infancy she had unusual abilities. She could not remember a time when she was unable to see people and hear voices which were neither seen nor heard by others. For this reason she was in childhood thought peculiar. There came a period in her young womanhood when, with a pencil in each hand, she would write on different subjects simultaneously, easily conversing at the same time. Automatic writing was not then known or understood, and the suggestion that the beyond was inhabited by people, just as this world is, had not dawned upon our mentality. Afterward there came in her presence, under certain conditions, independent voices, that is, a way was found by which the vocal organs of the dead, so called, could be and were clothed, so that they spoke audibly in our atmosphere. And in this manner came the discovery of another plane inhabited by all the countless dead, where individuality is actually continued, a world as real and tangible as this. It was my good fortune to meet Mrs. French early, and the compact then formed was faithfully kept to the end. She was as anxious as I was to understand the play of forces in her presence, and without payment she freely gave her time and strength that through her instrumentality good might come, not only to those living here but also to those in the great beyond. The idea of accepting money for such service was abhorrent to her, and she devoted her life to the liberation of the mind, that the mental bonds of superstition might be broken, and that mankind might become better by living more intelligently. Her work gave the world a new discovery, and her labor opened the door to the unknown land. Her love went out to those in sorrow, to the unfortunate, the rich, the poor, and the ignorant, and yet with her great power she was a child, sincere and frank and full of hope as spring, and she ever borrowed sunshine of tomorrow to make the present glad. She saw into the great beyond where the modes of motion were too rapid for physical sight, she knew the needs of others, and her charities encompassed them, and as the years passed, and the results became more apparent, the censure of this little world failed to sting. Her span of Earth's life was exceedingly long. For many years her physical ear failed to catch sounds, she grew refined and delicate as her life force ebbed. Some years before her dissolution she became blind, and all the beauty of the physical world was shut out, but still our wonderful work went on. Toward the end she became weary with well-doing, and met the change with confidence and courage. Mrs. French passed into the next world gladly. For her physic sight had already beheld the glories of her new home, she had more friends there than here, and she had often heard the voices of the husband, who gave his life that the union might be preserved, and of her son who passed just as manhood touched the noon of life. She went not as a stranger into an unknown land, but as one familiar with the way, for just across the border, there waited with outstretched hands and words of welcome countless thousands who had been helped through her effort. The memory of Emily S. French comes like a benediction. Over every cradle nature bends and smiles. And at this second birth it does the same. She made me her friend by being honest, I made her my friend by being fair, and so we worked for 20 years and more to learn how to expel the fear of death from the human heart. She grew old as we count time, feeble in body and blind, yet her courage and devotion never waned, and at the end she smiled and met the dawn of everlasting life. She was an instrument through which a great group worked. In her presence with the necessary conditions the people in the next plane spoke, and never again can it be said, the dead know not anything. I cannot give out the knowledge gained through Mrs. French's instrumentality without paying this tribute to her. She was the noblest woman I have known. She was both honest and brave. She enriched herself by aiding others. She helped to stay the tears that fell from furrowed cheeks and looked with pity on ignorance and superstition. She came to know that all wretchedness and pomp lose distinction in the democracy of death and that only character survives. To her in the great beyond where she now resides I send my love. We shall meet again. End.